Welcome to the Focus Roundtable, Embedding Security, Embedding Information Security into Your Organization's DNA. Focus.com's 5,000 industry experts help millions of professionals make better business and technology decisions by answering questions, publishing research, and speaking at events. Visit Focus.com to learn more and become a member today. Please visit our event page at www.focus.com/events to post and view questions and or comments. If you're following the conversation on Twitter, please use the hashtag #FocusRT85, all one word. So let's get started. Today, our moderator is Richard Steenen. Richard, go ahead and take it away.
Thank you, Brielle, and welcome everybody to this Focus Roundtable. Our topic is enterprise security, embedding information security into your organization's DNA. And I'm Richard Steenen, Chief Research Analyst at IT Harvest and author of the book Surviving Cyberwar. My panelists today are some of the Focus.com's leading security experts that have been participating and providing tremendous guidance when people post their questions or just in participating in the discussion that goes online there. And I'm going to have each of them introduce themselves. We're going to start out with Andrew Baker.
Thank you very much, Richard. My name is Andrew Baker. I'm currently the Director of Service Operations at SWN Communications. I'm a hands-on information technology leader with expertise in designing, deploying, and maintaining secure networks for enterprises of all sizes. For over 15 years, I've served as a trusted advisor to small and mid-sized organizations in various industries such as media and entertainment, internet services, financial services, legal services, and publishing and social services. You can find out more about me on my profile at focus.com, where you'll also see links to my LinkedIn and Twitter accounts. And I'm glad to be here today.
Great, Andrew. Thank you. And Fred Stuck.
Hi, everyone. I'm Fred Stuck. I'm a network security engineer. I have about 10 years plus of experience. I've worked in a variety of organizations, both large and small, mostly on the networking side, but I've also have some experience in systems and some development work as well. Glad to be here. You can find more about me on my Focus.com profile as well, and also my website, geek37.net.
Beautiful. And finally, Robert Parham.
Hello, everyone, and thank you, Richard. My name is Robert Parham, formerly of Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, where I served as the Director of Information Security Governance within the legal department, where I was liaison between the information technology and the business community responsible for developing policy and governance across the enterprise. More recently, I just joined a company called Mar Labs, where I will be serving as Director of Information Security Practice, and I have the opportunity to upstart a security practice as well as maintain it for a professional services organization. I have about 30 years background in information security and technology. Part of that was out of the United States Air Force, where I served 20 years and worked as network security chief for headquarters personnel center. I can be found on the focus group, and I look forward to this conversation. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Robert, and congrats on the move. That's good to hear. So injecting security into an organization's DNA sounds a little bit like where's the silver bullet. And in this discussion, I want to break it down into three separate areas where we can get to this point of making security much more than the add-on, oh yeah, that's something that we got to spend money on, but we don't like it, part of an organization. So I want to break it down into organizational changes that can be made, technology changes, or how can technology help do this, and then address some of the personal issues that individuals, be they in a large organization or are the IT security department, can take away with them. So let's start out with you, Andrew. Give us your thoughts, specifically on organizational requirements to inject security into the DNA of the organization.
Okay, thanks, Richard. In order for an organization to develop a culture of security, right, where security is something that is thought of from the beginning, two things need to be done organizationally. One, everyone in the organization must have something that ties into that mandate. They must be responsible for some aspect of security relative to whatever their area of expertise or their domain is. And secondly, the person who is responsible for security needs to be high enough in the organization that it is political suicide to ignore them and the mandates that come from them. Without those two things and without the explicit support of senior management, you're not going to see an organization embed security into its DNA.
So, Andrew, what do you mean by everybody have something to do with security? Are you talking, you know, does the CFO or the CEO or the COO going to have security responsibilities?
Well, everyone, the CFO is responsible on some level for the business risk of an organization. He's a steward of the organization's resources, primarily focused on money, but not only. The legal team is responsible for managing the risk of an organization. Information security is about risk management. It's about how our assets are used for our benefit and not to our detriment. And if those people aren't paying attention, if they're buying things that cost less but are less secure, then they're increasing the risk. They may be helping the bottom line in the short term, but they're increasing the risk. And so all of those things tie into what they need to do, what they need to be cognizant of as they go about their duties. Security cannot be an afterthought.
So, Robert, is what Andrew's talking about possible? I mean, you've been a pretty big organization. If you're a Blue Cross Blue Shield, did you see any motion towards actually pushing it all the way up and down the ladder like that?
It's definitely possible, Richard, but it can't be done by accident. You have to have a focused initiative to actually introduce security to the organization as a business process as opposed to a technical solution. I've seen organizations try to hit it from an infrastructure point of view, and it just doesn't work, particularly in today's environment where you've got more information being accessed by various locations. The perimeter is gone. You have your tablets, you have your smartphones, you have all these different devices trying to access very critical data. So you've really got to establish a formal, how do I say it, a data governance model to actually track the data from the input to the output. And as Andrew said, you've got to monitor the risk throughout the workflow. You really have to have organizations change from a technocentric approach to a very data-centric approach. The compliance efforts are driving that. Organizations are slow to accept that at this point, but I think they really don't have much of a choice as we mature and the train is moving. You're not going to prevent social networking. You're not going to prevent smartphones. You're not going to prevent any of these new technologies that expose data to the organization. So once again, I think the data governance, data-centric approach is your answer to changing the culture of an organization.
Fred Stuck, does this ring true to you? Since as a network security engineer, you're probably working pretty close to the coal face, as we say.
To reinforce kind of what Andrew said is it kind of has to have a top-down approach. You know, the leadership of the organization has to realize that security is important to the survival of the company. You know, if, you know, from my perspective, I'm looking at the technology, I'm implementing intrusion detection devices, making sure there's perimeter security, in perimeter routers and such like that, and firewalls and all that stuff. But, you know, it's not just the network that needs to be secure. The systems themselves need to be secure. There needs to be best business practices followed from every person in the organization because everybody has some responsibility, like Andrew said, for security and make sure they're not opening that email that looks like spam, you know, that sort of thing. Some of this goes into the business responsibility of training its users, you know, making sure that there's proper security training developed and pushed out and make sure that everybody has that training. You know, some of this stuff takes time, it takes resources, and it takes money to do it, but in the event that something goes wrong, people are cognizant of the situation, they know what they're reading is something legitimate and not something that's malicious in nature, and they have a better feel for the different things that could be coming at them.
I'm a bit of an iconoclast, and I'm not really in favor of relying on security and awareness training. Aren't you putting yourself out there if you're relying on, you know, the temporary worker that just came in the door to not open an email attachment? Aren't you relying on
that's not to say that there's not additional tools and resources out there, but without that training, if something slips through some of those cracks, you know, that, you know, maybe your spam filter didn't pick up on something new that came out today. But, you know, you have training in place to make people aware of things that could potentially happen, but you're doing multiple layers of security, then you have better chance of, you know, not being hit by that, you know, new worm or malware virus or something that's coming out, you know, through email or what have you.
Can any of you think of an organization that you've worked at that has gotten security into its DNA? Where, you know, almost like I've worked at companies in the auto industry, you know, before and after they got quality into their DNA, and it was a dramatic shift. Have you seen that actually occur anywhere in organization?
This is Andrew. I don't know that I can say that yet. I've seen folks give lip service to it. I've seen folks be oblivious to it. I've seen folks start down the path, but they're really focused, as Robert hinted, in the technology part. So they're in the realm where I'm attentive to security. Do we have the right security tools? And they haven't quite gotten that security is much broader than that. I mean, think about your home, right? Your home, if I talked about how to secure your home, first thing you might think about is an alarm system and cameras and whatever. But what about telling your children not to talk to strangers, to have your key ready when you come to the door? Don't loiter out there. Watch who's on the block. Those things have nothing to do with technology. Those things have everything to do with awareness and perception. So those are things that you teach people, not to scare them, but so that it becomes a part of their normal activities. And as a result, they'll come to you and say, listen, I saw something that didn't seem normal. And there may be four or five times where they say that and there's nothing, but there'll be that one time where there's something and it saves you a lot.
How do you push that all the way to the top where, I mean, the number one question I get when I address mixed audiences is, yeah, we all believe this stuff, but how do we get the board of directors, the CEO, the stakeholders to actually believe it?
This is Robert. Let me take this one. I think as you alluded before, we don't implement security for the sake of security. Security is a tool of risk management. You've got to bring it to the organization as a risk management strategy. You've got to be able to explain the fact that there will be an impact. There will be a cost involved of not installing or implementing the correct security controls and procedures. And you've got to keep the senior management interest. You've got to report metrics. You've got to continuously let them know the status or the security profile of their organization and explain to them where gaps exist. This isn't done overnight. It's not done in a snapshot method, but it's done in a sustainable, repeatable, continuous approach, utilizing a formal framework, actually. You've got to come together, get a buy-in from top management, have them understand where you're going as an organization. And that depends on your vertical, what organization you happen to be in, what regulatory obligations you have, what type of data that you process. You have to take all that into consideration because that's part of the characteristic of an organization. You've got to develop the roadmap and then back it up. How do you get to whatever capability model or level that you agreed upon? And then it becomes an iterative process. You implement that control, that roadmap through various control objectives, and you monitor over time. Again, it's not going to be overnight. There is no silver bullet. It will take a continuous improvement methodology and approach, and you've got to get buy-in from the top. And you get that from bottom-up approach. And let me give you an example of that. In a large organization, You'll have data stewards located throughout the organization who are accountable. That big word, accountable, most people are, it's somebody else's problem, they're pointing fingers. But once you've established accountability to the data that flows through the organization, then you can start to support and implement classification schemes, the proper controls, the policies that you've agreed upon, working in concert with the awareness program, making sure that all security controls that are put in place are aligned to the business strategy. That's important. There's always a conflict of interest when it comes to security. You talk usability, you talk about controlling cost and security. Those are conflicting objectives there. So you've got to come to a happy medium. You've got to come to a point where everyone assumes a win-win situation. I'll say win-win from the sense that you never say no. You implement new technologies, but you do it in a secure fashion. You're able to articulate what the risk would be if you do not put the proper controls in and translate that into dollars and cents or business speak so that the business can understand the ramifications of not implementing the correct security controls. But once again, it can't happen in a vacuum. It can't happen in a silo. It has to, it takes some subject matter experts from everyone across the organization. I'm talking people from IT, legal, privacy, your business unit, functional managers. They have to work usually in a virtual type of collaboration. You don't have to set up a particular group, but there should be some type of dialogue that's ongoing so that everyone understands the business context that the security that falls into.
Andrew, makes sense?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It, you know, the one point I will harp on that Robert pointed out, it takes time. And it takes time because security costs, right? It just costs less than not doing security. But it takes time to see that because everybody gets by without necessarily putting full security in place or proper security in place. And so they're looking at, you're asking me to spend X dollars and to change X processes and to slow down in the following way. And we haven't been hit, you know, or we haven't been attacked, or we haven't lost. And you need to emphasize that it does happen. I think this year, it's going to be easier than ever. If you haven't started a security program yet, this is the year to have started it, because with Anonymous and the whole anti-sec realm heading down that path, you've got ample evidence of how easily large organizations can be hit and how vigilant you have to be. It's not about installing stuff and walking away and just brushing off your hands. It's an ongoing process. You continue to talk, you continue to evaluate, you continue to address what the business needs, and it has to be baked in there.
Andrew, I'm going to come back to you with that point. Fred Stuck, do you have anything to add to the how do you push it up the ladder or uphill?
Well, just a couple of points based on some of the comments that were made. One thing I just want to point out is that when we talk about cost and security, it's not just dollars and cents of, you know, somebody hacked my computer, it's going to take, you know, X number of man hours to resolve the issue, and it's going to cost X number of dollars to fix. It's also costs associated with loss of reputation, you know, because if you have to say to your clients, we've been hacked, your data has been stolen, the confidence level of your clients is going to be lost, you know, and that might, in long term, or maybe even short term, you might lose clients. And that's going to have possibly a significant cost. Now, the other thing to look at, and you know, I've learned this over the years, is that security is insurance. It doesn't necessarily equate the same way as, you know, buying a server and you know, you're going to sell resources on that server, or you're hosting an application or what have you. The investment is to ensure that, you know, just like you have fire insurance or liability insurance or car insurance or, you know, however you want to compare it, but it's insurance against the risk at hand. You know, we're ensuring our organization that hopefully it will not be attacked, and we're doing everything we possibly can to make sure it doesn't.
Okay, something Andrew said sparked a question here, and that is, if for the longest time I've seen IT departments and IT practitioners, security practitioners in particular, practicing CYA. So they couldn't actually get the spending they needed. So whenever there was a new outbreak of a worm or virus or new attack methodology, they would blast the world with warnings that said, hey, don't do this, or we got to invest in this, or we're going to lose our shirt. And the whole purpose, the only point was that when the disaster occurred, they could say they were covered. They said, hey, I told you this would happen. We should have spent money on it. And that might have worked for the last decade. But we're entering a phase, and obviously people are doing the sorts of things we've been talking about so far, and taking more and more responsibility for the security of the organization. So what do you do when you've gotten to that point and security is injected in the DNA and you're pretty secure, as are, you know, some of the great companies I've worked with over the years? If you think about all of the oil and gas companies in the U.S., they used to be the most secure companies I visited. And yet they got hit by a Google Aurora and follow-on attacks that the McAfee documented. What do you do to when your security that you've been pushing for fails? Because there's always going to be something. And then how do you, one, save your job, and two, how do you make sure that the company can heal and move on?
I think I could start off here. Basically, you're never 100% secure. There's no way to make something 100% secure. Security is always an evolution. Okay, you got to constantly analyze, review, and then reanalyze. You know, so there's a process that's constantly ongoing. You constantly have to have third parties, you know, trying to do penetration testing on your network to make sure that the security implementation that you've put in place is secure today. But once that test is done, something new can come out tomorrow that proves otherwise. So it's, you have to constantly be diligent about all the new things that are coming out and applying and mitigating to those new vulnerabilities, new attacks, new whatever that might jeopardize your organization.
Okay, so I'll follow up unless Robert, you want to do it?
No, I would just you know, tag right along with what he just said, that security is a journey, not a destination. I learned that early on in my career, and as the years go by, I learned that more and more. Secondly, the goal is to minimize the risk or reduce the threat as much as possible. You're never totally eliminated. There's always a moving target. The more access, the more possible vulnerabilities. So, you know, again, it's an ongoing process.
Yeah, I want to follow up on the mitigation of risk. Information security, you know, to answer your question more directly, Richard, you said, well, how do you protect your job when the security that you've put in place and advocated has failed? Well, define failure. The first point is, I'm never going to suggest that any of this stuff we're putting in place makes us absolutely secure. And I have been asked that. You know, you say, hey, we need to get this to mitigate this thing. And they say, well, will getting this make us secure? And I say, no, it won't. That's not the question you should be asking. And I help educate them on what we're talking about, what we're doing. When you put in an effective information security program, there are a number of things number of benefits that you get. One, you're protected against most random low-level things. Right, you're resilient, highly resilient to those classes of things. Two, you're able to monitor attacks and attempted attacks such that if something breaks through, you're able to see where it went and you know, yes, someone got in, but this is where they got and this is how long they were in, and so we know what our exposure was. And three, you have multiple layers, so that someone breaking in does not get the keys to the kingdom 5 minutes after they've broken through your first defense. So when I've put in all of this and I've worked with the organization and we have effectively put in our security tools, processes, people, and we do suffer a breach, you see how the Lockheed Martin breach was? That breach report was very different from many of the other ones. They had what seemed to be a better understanding of when the intruder had gotten in there, where the intruder had gotten, whether or not anything was lost. Whereas if you look at Sony, they didn't know that anyone had broken in. People were all over the place taking things and showing them. It was a totally different level. So we look at the Lockheed Martin breach in a very different light. They caught it with their monitoring in real time and knew where it was and could assert that things were or were not taken. And when you can do that and you can show this is what happened, how sophisticated the person was, where they could have gotten, but we confined them to here, I think you stand a very good chance of not only maintaining your job, but being able to justify the investments that you've made to that point.
And leading up to the Lockheed breach, of course, was the precursor, which was the RSA breach,
yes.
Which had similar knowledge of what happened, right? They recognized that it happened. They talked to their key customers, maybe could have done a better job of telling the rest of the world what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
But it certainly cost them a pretty penny, up to $90 million, I believe, is the price tag they put on it themselves right now.
Right. Not including, as Fred mentioned, any loss of potential sales.
Right. Yeah, and certainly I know the other vendors of strong authentication devices are telling me they're having a heyday. So
yeah,
going forward, that could be a problem. But luckily, RSA is a big company. So speaking of technology, is there specific technology that helps inject security into the DNA of an organization? So I'm not talking about the next and greatest protective technology, but some way that you can use technology to help accomplish this goal.
Well, I would say that there are a number of players in the security awareness space that are providing tools that help you with ongoing training and tabletop exercises and your overall awareness, getting an idea of where your employee base is, helping them with the key issues that would lower their social engineering profile, and being able to report those metrics to senior management so they understand where the organization stands at that time. Those are the technologies, I think, that speak directly towards facilitating your security strategy. The other tools, most of which are going to be infrastructure related, have to support a strategy. They cannot make the strategy. They will only support your security strategy and the embedding process. But things that deal with personnel, that's what's going to help with the DNA.
And also, I'd like to add some tools that are out there that will help support the DNA as well. When you talk about risk management tools, you have to be proactive in this. It doesn't happen by mistake. So you have to have a process in place prior to ever getting attacked, prior to ever having any exploitation of vulnerabilities. So some of these risk management tools allow you to do that. There are government mandates that require organizations, particularly in the healthcare industry, to perform risk assessments on an annual basis of their critical assets. Well, there are tools out there that will help facilitate that and give you a snapshot of how well your controls are. Not the fact that they're out there, but how effective those controls are across your organization. And that's important if you're trying to reach some type of maturity level on an iterative basis. Some of the government risk compliance tools also help you to adjust the security profile from a holistic manner, looking at governance risk compliance, which are very tightly coupled in providing the secure infrastructure. So those tools actually facilitate the process.
What about the tools for measuring your vulnerability profile, you know, that check all your vulnerabilities and your patch management and give you these scores?
Those tools are good, but those tools, if you don't have a framework by which you're doing security, those tools, how do they help you? Right? It's those tools make sense when you've established this is our patch management approach. This is our risk management approach. If I come back and I give you a list, here's 1,000 servers and here are the vulnerabilities on them, and there's no sense of where these servers are in the environment and what their criticality is to you, how do you go about patching them?
Yeah.
Right? So that information in isolation just generates a lot of work. It doesn't necessarily lead you to being more secure, because if you got through half of that list and it turned out that you were working from the bottom up of the least critical systems, you could be hacked while you're doing it, and there would have been no benefit.
A lot of work, you're right, Andrew. A lot of work that, for the most part, because we're all challenged, you know, for the most part, just doesn't get done. You identify vulnerabilities, and they just may be left there because there are other priorities within the organization that are more important. And we all have limited staff, limited resources. You've got to, you know, use that data-centric approach. You have to understand where the data is in your organization, what's critical, what would be the impact if that information was lost. You have to understand. You have to know your environment. You have to know what's on the front end, what's on the back end, where's the data repository. If a front end web server has a vulnerability, well, what's on the back end that could be exploited? You have to take all that into consideration as you try to rank and prioritize your risk so that you know how to track and remediate.
Makes sense. Fred, do you have any experience with like network behavior monitoring where you actually keep tabs on employees and could kind of issue alerts if they misbehave on the network?
Honestly, not specifically. But one thing I'd like to add to Andrew and Robert's comments is that once you have some buy-in that, you know, maybe security is important, a third-party assessment, a vulnerability assessment of the organization to say, okay, let's look at the overall security practice. Let's scan the network. Let's scan production systems or corporate systems for vulnerabilities. Let's take a look at policies and procedures in place that are current. Doing this type of third-party analysis, having a third party come in, look at your environment, and then tell you where you're deficient. Look at your network and say, you know, these systems aren't patched, or, you know, an external person from the internet can hack into your box using these vulnerabilities on your system. It's kind of an eye-opener to the issues that you have, where you can go and say, all right, well, these are the problems. What do we need to do to mitigate them? You know, what can we do as an organization, come in and make changes that are necessary? What technology do we need to do that?
Robert, do you have experience with bringing in outside services to do those assessments?
Oh, yes. It adds great value to the entire process. You get a third-party professional to come into your organization, do an annual penetration test, maybe a gap assessment against some framework that you're running. You get a snapshot in time of your current security posture, and you're better prepared to articulate your current stance to senior management. A lot of the regulatory guidances, just such as GLBA and HIPAA, require you to actually perform a third-party assessment. It helps you to apply your budget in a manner that gives you the best bang for the dollar. We all have limited budgets. We all are challenged with where to spend the money. They will highlight areas that really need to be addressed quickly. They may even take a look at your organizational structure and come back and tell you, is that right for your particular vertical and or the culture of your organization? You've got to take that. Every organization is a living mechanism, basically. You've got to understand the culture of the organization and how best to apply that security. There is no cake-cutter solution. You've got to work hand-in-hand with the third party that comes in, because they have to educate the on-staff security folks, because when they're gone, you're stuck with whatever's left. So you've got to understand and work closely with these folks, because it does help facilitate the overall process.
Cool. So you guys could probably help me out with something. As long as I've been in this business, I've talked to people who said, you know, why should I install that firewall way back in the old days? I don't have anything worth stealing. You've all heard that over and over. And it always escalates, you know, pretty soon they recognize, yeah, they're going to have virus and worm attacks and random hackers just breaking in for the fun of it and defacing their website. So they agree with that after it happens. But now I believe we're at a point where you have to start worrying about nation state industrial spying. Mm-hmm. And I'm running into the exact same wall. It's like, why would anyone care about our furniture manufacturing business, even though there was one famous case now on the East Coast where furniture manufacturer had all of their designs stolen by a Chinese company and ultimately went out of business because the exact same designs were available for a tenth the cost.
See,
so how do you get over that?
That's a good question. And, even when we were talking about the previous section, it's not just whether or not the data you have is important to you. And a lot of times we protect data from the standpoint of how important to us it is. Sometimes you have to protect data by how important it is to other people, because they might not attack the thing you care about. They might be attacking this other thing that's not as critical to you, but will result in your defenses being broken if there's not a huge deterrent. Organizations need to understand, and this is one of the things that I've told companies, especially small businesses, when they're like, we don't have anything that's important, it doesn't matter. An attacker doesn't necessarily know that you have something until they've broken in. So you need to be protected anyway. They're not going to find out that the vault is empty until they've gotten to the vault. That's A. B, there's a lot of misdirection going on. When I attack machines, I also want them for botnets. I want them as a staging ground. If I'm attacking a federal government system or the NSA or FBI, I'm not doing that from my desktop. I'm not doing that from my set of machines. I'm commanding some other systems, and then I'm attacking from there, because then if they trace it back, it's to somebody else. It's not to me. Right. You can imagine that you're going to get people, an organization that may be unscrupulous enough to hire an entity to break into company A to attack competitor A in order to cast bad light on the competitor. You know, so there are all sorts of reasons why people would break into your environment, some of which have nothing to do with knowing the value of the assets in the environment. But computing power is an asset. And being able to procure it is something that people are going to use to do other attacks, denial of service, et cetera.
I actually have a good example of that. I researched a SQL injection attack on an organization that tried to put, iframe tags in every text field of a database. And it was a very simple attack. I later found the actual code was available, the Internet Storm Center had the code that was executed. It was, they believe in Chinese, it could have been any Asian dialect. However, all it did was Google searches and looked for vulnerable systems based on certain Google parameters. And when it found one, it attacked it and injected the data into the database. Had no rhyme or reason for attacking a specific person, except you came up in the Google search.
Just harvesting you based on your vulnerabilities.
Absolutely.
And you weren't actually the destination of the attack. They were actually trying to put iframes into your database that would be presented in your website so that your users of your website would be attacked.
And actually very similar attacks are going on that are targeted. Very specifically, one of the best examples is exact same thing happened to NASDAQ's director's desk. And obviously the users going to that site were members of boards of directors of publicly traded companies, so super high net worth individuals and high value targets for cyber criminals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the excuse that I don't understand why they're coming after me is invalid, because at least 80% of the attacks are not coming after you, but will just catch you as collateral damage. And the others are targeting you for reasons that you might not deem important, but they have, and that's what matters.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was. So I'm studying a little bit of Cold War history, and I realized that, we've seen a lot of attacking against oil, gas, and rare earth mining companies. And they apparently are going after their databases of resources and understanding of the resources they have. In other words, somebody is trying to get a picture of a marketplace, and with better knowledge, probably making better trades in that marketplace. And sure enough, on the CIA's website is a story of attacks from Russia where they actually tapped the trading desk phones of our grain markets and then made a purchase at a 25% discount off the normal price of 25% of the entire U.S. grain harvest for a year. So very interesting that history is repeating itself, and we're seeing the same thing going on in resource markets right now.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you think, as well as attacks against, for instance, the carbon trading credits in the EU, where a single attacker got away with $39 million worth of carbon credits and converted them to cash before they started shutting down bank accounts trying to get it back.
The criminals are crafty. They have a lot of time on their hands, and the payoff is huge, so it's worth it for them.
Absolutely.
So we have an obligation to show due diligence.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And every person has to. You know, if you look, if for those in the New York metro area, you see that the MTA and all of these folks are putting up signs. You know, if you see something that's not in the right place, notify someone. Basically, they're saying anti-terrorism is everybody's job, right? Doesn't matter what your official job is, but within your sphere of influence, your ability to notice things that are out of place informs us who have the authority to do something about it. And that's how we have to pursue security. Information security, you're responsible. Each worker is responsible for some information. You're responsible to secure that information. And so you need to be cognizant of that at all times, because your failure to secure it damages you and the organization.
Great segue into the final series of questions, which is, how do you personally help to inject DNA into the security DNA into the organization? And what, you know, what personal, you know, no matter what role we have, whether we are in security, just in IT, or we're a sales guy out on the street, what can we do individually to make sure our organization is more secure?
Well, the first thing I think we want to do is it's got to be relatively easy, right? If you're just heaping an immense amount of rules on people, you're not going to embed anything. That's just going to be torturous. So people kind of have to want to do it, and you're facilitating them wanting to do it. Most people want to keep their jobs, right? And I'm not talking about in terms of threatening them with their jobs. But if you make it obvious that, hey, the longer the company is around, the longer you're around employed at the company. Our trade secrets, our effectiveness, all of these things are undermined if our data is leaked through inappropriate conversation in elevators, storing things inappropriately on the internet, not paying attention when we're sending emails to customers or suppliers. If these things are done, they undermine our corporate viability, which means that you could be jobless, and not because of any repercussions, but just because if there's no company functioning, you can't be an employee of it. As people understand that, and it's little simple things, lock your workstation when you get up. Pretend that you're sitting in the middle of a room of competitors, and guard the information that you're responsible for. Don't discuss things with people who don't have a need to know. As long as people understand that those simple things are part of security, then they'll be able to do them, because those things are logical. Those things are reasonable. Those things are not too onerous. And when they start thinking like that, they will bring things to your attention. I've had people alert me at work because of something they saw on their home computer, and they wanted to know if this was a problem that we might need to worry about at work. You know, because they understand that we're paying attention to that sort of thing. So if you get people to pay attention, then it will become a part, a way of life for them, and that will make the organization better.
And this is Robert. Throughout your awareness campaign, I think it's necessary for you to personalize those issues. Let them know that, you know, this is how you may be impacted.